Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
I'm HRN's Communications Director, Kat Johnson, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat in Three.
I think we should realize that we more or less have a broken food system. When 800 million of us go to bed hungry, 600 million are obese, we waste 30% of our food, then something is fundamentally wrong.
We'll introduce you to one food waste solution happening in Asia.
They introduced a system where residents were issued an electronic ID card that would open an automated bin and enable them to weigh the food waste being dropped off. And then they would be charged, you know, in a certain amount of money for the weight of that food.
And we'll take a look at some of the real struggles happening closer to home.
How is it possible that a meal that was perfectly fine to consume at 10:59 p.m. then becomes waste at 11 p.m.
So tune in to this week's Meat in Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Elena Santigade. As we continue to explore cooperative and unique approaches to business in the cheese industry, today we turn to the production side of things. Wisconsin is a unique state in many ways. The Lakes of the North Woods, the Dells, Festa in Milwaukee. There's so many fun things going on in Wisconsin. And of course, there's a long history of cheesemaking. That history is largely a cooperative one. And perhaps the best known example is the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, formerly the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. The Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin builds awareness of Wisconsin-produced dairy products by creating national publicity, managing digital advertising, and driving sales, distribution, and trial through retail and food service promotions. It also supports in-school education about the benefits of dairy and funding for the UW Center for Dairy Research. Today, I'll be exploring two examples of partnerships in cheesemaking, both based in Wisconsin. First up, Anna Bates of Landmark Creamery, and after the break, I'll speak with Chris Gentine of the Artisan Cheese Exchange. Hi, Anna. Welcome to the Cutting the Curd.
Hi, Elena. Happy to be here.
So today's show, again, is all about partnerships in cheesemaking. And I've been thinking about the whole it takes a village approach and how it's really needed to create almost anything significant in this world. Anna, you were telling me about how Landmark Creamery is a newer cheesemaking endeavor. And I know you've plugged right into the cheesemaking community there in Wisconsin. So why don't you tell our listeners some of the ways that your neighbors and even sometimes I think your competitors have even helped you as you've gotten up and running with the business.
Sure. Yeah, we definitely wouldn't be here where we are today without the help of many other amazing cheesemakers in southern Wisconsin. And for starters, there's Bob Wills, who owns Cedar Grove and Clock Shadow Creamery, two plants in Plain, Wisconsin, and Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. And the Milwaukee plant is like in downtown, right?
It's an urban cheese plant,
yep.
And that's actually where we first made our cheese 5 years ago. Uh-huh. We started at Clock Shadow Creamery. We would use that plant at night, rent space there. And recently, in the past 2 years, we moved up to Cedar Grove, Bob's other plant, and that's where we produce all of our Landmark cheese.
Mm-hmm. So in that sense, you didn't have those startup costs. It's almost like it's almost like the equivalent of renting a market stall or something where everything's sort of built in for you and you didn't have to purchase the equipment.
Exactly. I mean, even putting up a micro dairy is a daunting financial experience. So being able to rent space in the back of Cedar Grove, it's an appropriately sized vat for what we're doing. We're able to do experiments, and they also have a fleet of trucks. So they're able to pick up our milk as well.
Hmm. Now, is that something that you approached Bob about, or is that sort of out there in the Wisconsin community as an option? You know, does he go around sort of connecting with folks?
I'd say a little bit of both. There is a history with Bob's factories of some really amazing cheeses getting started back there. Mm-hmm. Pleasant Ridge Reserve from Uplands was first made at Cedar Grove. Mike Gingrich started there. Yeah. Katie started making Evalon there. So he does. I wouldn't say he advertises the space, but if there are people in need who are getting started, if you get to know Bob, it's a possible opportunity.
Right. It's like known as an incubator of sorts in that way.
Exactly.
Very cool. And so when did you start making cheese there?
This is our fifth full year. We made at Clock Shadow our first year and moved to Cedar Grove the next year. So 4 years.
Neat. And what prompted that move from one space to the other?
Some of its logistics on Cedar Grove's part, it actually worked out better for them, and it works out better for us. It's a little closer to home. It's an hour and 20 minutes drive instead of 2 hours, and it also allowed us to make at better hours. Before we were, I would literally pass my business partner, Anna Landmark, on the highway at like 2 a.m.
Oh.
She would finish the make, and I would come and pack the cheese up for orders and delivery. So this way at Cedar Grove, we're able to make during the day.
Oh, wow. So, and you two are really a two-woman team, mostly at Landmark. Is that right? Or do you have a larger crew that you're working with at all?
Typically, at most, we'll have two part-time people helping with some production, especially the packing of our little tiny sheet milk buttons, Petit Nuage. Mm-hmm. And also now we have a shop. Just last year, we moved into our own space for just aging. Mm-hmm. And we have a little shop up front, so we have a part-time person who helps us there.
I see. So you're making the cheese at Cedar Grove, but then aging it on site in your own facility.
We were renting space, but just actually a few weeks ago, we got the final inspection and fully licensed to age our cheese in our own building, which is very exciting.
That's so exciting. So has that been part of the plan all along? Is that a piece that is harder to do sort of in cooperation with a rented space like Cedar Grove?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Cedar Grove has very little aging space, and they use a lot of it on their own. So we were renting a completely separate facility, which also was close to Cedar Grove but far away from us. So that was always our plan. The first investment we were going to make would be in our own aging space, which is less expensive than a plant, but really allows us to do, gives us flexibility to make a lot of different kinds of cheeses.
Very cool. So you've also... you know, in terms of partnerships in cheese making, this whole idea that I'm curious about, you guys are cheesemakers, but you're not farmstead cheesemakers. Is that right?
That is true.
So you're buying milk from other producers.
Yes. So we primarily deal with sheep milk, and we work with one, sometimes two family farms. And we work with them to set up a contract at the beginning of the year, which says how much milk we plan to buy at a minimum, what the price will be, what the feed will be, et cetera. And then we also make one cow milk cheese. And for that cow milk cheese, we actually purchase milk from Uplands Cheese Company in Dodgeville.
Our buddy Andy.
Yeah.
So tell me about the mixed milk cheese.
It's actually all cow, so it's not mixed.
Oh, so it's not mixed.
Yep, it's all cow. And we first made that cheese. It was actually the very first cheese we ever made, and it was kind of an experiment to get our feet wet before our sheep dairy was up and running. But when we made it, it tasted so great, especially when we're using really amazing grass-fed milk. We decided to keep going with it. So it's definitely not... We don't make an enormous amount of that cheese. It's called Tallgrass Reserve. But a couple times a year when Andy is taking a break from making his own cheeses, we'll buy a couple loads, and their milk is delicious and exquisite and a beautiful golden color, and it makes a really amazing cheese, and we feel privileged to be able to use it. In fact, just this weekend at my farmer's market, Mike Gingrich, who is the original owner of Uplands Cheese and the original maker, he came two markets ago and tasted Tallgrass, and he came back again last week to buy some more, and he was just so tickled to see his milk being used with another cheesemaker, so it was a lot of fun to chat with him.
That is so neat. Is that the first, you know, I don't hear about a lot of, since Uplands only makes their own cheese when the cows are out on pasture, I don't hear about them selling their milk that often, so it does seem really unique that you're doing this partnership.
Yeah, I don't think it happens a lot. And I know Andy got a little bigger, put a vat extension on so we can make even more Pleasant Ridge and Rush Creek. But we're making such small batches, mm-hmm. and, you know, they have, I think, 200 cows.
Yeah.
We only buy like one morning's milking. So, mm-hmm.
and that alone is it's an interesting, back to this theme of how a full sort of economy can support, how members of an economy can support each other. You know, what Andy might do with that milk otherwise might be less sustainable for him. You know, I mean, it seems like it's neat that if he has extra, he doesn't have, he's probably not going to have a built-in customer in terms of somebody who's buying it regularly. But since you're able to be flexible on making that cheese when the milk's available, it's like a win-win.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about distribution and how you have gotten into the distribution game, because I know that that's also something unique to Wisconsin and your region in Wisconsin. And I'm excited for our listeners to hear a little bit about how that piece of it works.
Yeah, we are very lucky to be located where we are, because the logistics of moving cheese around the country is kind of daunting when you think about it. Mm-hmm. A lot of small cheesemakers will start with obviously a farmer's market stall and selling locally, but we really wanted to support all the milk that a small family farm could produce. And in order to do that, we knew we'd have to expand beyond local distribution, self-distribution quickly.
Was that the goal that for some people, I feel like it's, oh, I want to have a business of X size because that feels right to me, or I want to have a presence in certain markets. But for you, it sounds like it was grounded. The goal was more grounded in that idea of supporting the full production of a small family farm.
Yes. Our goal all along has been to support our families, mm-hmm. and as many small family farms as we can. And the goal was to when possible, add on other small family farms and buy all of their milk. So we've done that with two small family farms now on the sheep side. Cow milk is a little trickier because the production is so much higher.
Right.
We would love to do that someday as well.
Very cool. Okay, so you've got the milk. You're buying this milk. Go on. I sort of interrupted you.
That's okay. We started our first year just selling direct, mm-hmm. and then the next year we started talking to small distributors. And what I found, and also I had already been in contact with all the local cheesemakers, and we were within an hour of Chris Raleigh at Raleigh's Cheese, and Hooks, Tony Hook over there, and Andy at Uplands. And what I found and discovered is that they all work together to put together pallets for certain companies that will send trucks from New York City or California. And I was able to get in on that, which has been amazing. So when I speak to a distributor in California or somewhere on the West Coast or East Coast, mm-hmm. and they say, I love your cheese, but how in the world am I going to get it? I can simply ask, oh, do you buy from Uplands, Hooks, or Raleigh's? And inevitably, they do.
Nice.
And basically, we're all able to bring our cheeses together and build one large pallet, which makes it economical for the person hiring the truck and allows us to get our cheeses to lots of different places.
And is that, like, how, it seems like that's pretty accessible in terms of, like, reaching out to the folks at Raleigh or Uplands or Hooks to kind of coordinate and figure out how you're going to share the cost. Do you have a worked out system there, or is it a little more ad hoc?
It's pretty simple. I mean, typically the distributor is in charge of kind of the truck and the costs there. And basically whoever's ordering from us reaches out to each one of us, places their order, and tells us where it's going to be picked up. Mm. And we just have to have the cheese there at a certain date. It's casual, but it's effective.
Mm, very neat. When, I think of this idea of like family-sized businesses working with other family-sized businesses, and this sounds like that's the case, you know, that you're coordinating with people who maybe cheesemakers that are a little larger than you or do higher production, but this sort of level of involvement is kind of the same. So it might be easier to plug in.
It is. And it just allows, we're all small enough that any help is welcome. Mm-hmm. And it will be as simple as consolidating here, or if I'm driving past Uplands and going to Hooks, I'll even call them to see if they need anything driven down, because just to save them the 40-minute round trip when I'm literally passing both cheese plants
right.
is just a small thing I can do to help, which, you know, it all comes back around.
Yeah, totally. Well, that's, I just feel like it's so heartwarming too. There's an element of it that's like, I don't know, very feel good about the community there in the Wisconsin cheesemaking and dairy farming area.
It is. I mean, our philosophy always is, you know, rising tides lift all boats. Mm-hmm. You know, we, if there's going to be an amazing artisan Wisconsin cheese board, we all want to be on it. We don't mm-hmm. want to knock someone else off. We just want you to add in Landmark Creamery.
Right. Totally. Oh, man. Well, I can't believe it, but we're actually ready for our break here in the show. Real quick, Anna, what's the best way for our listeners to follow your progress and find your cheese?
Sure. We are on Instagram and Facebook, and our website is landmarkcreamery.com, and our phone numbers are there. We ship gift boxes across the country, and we'd love to hear from anybody.
Great. Well, thanks so much for coming on air with me, and I hope to see you soon out in Wisconsin.
We'd love to see you. Thanks, Elena.
Okay, great. Listeners, we're going to take a quick break. On the second half of today's show, I'll be chatting with Chris Gentine of the Artisan Cheese Exchange. Keep listening to hear more.
Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie? Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie? Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie just for me, girl? Please don't give none away. Let it get sweeter by the day.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of the Swiss Gruyere into the United States, but that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Kaltbach cave-age cheeses, Der Scharfer Max, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
Save it, baby. Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie? Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie? Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie just for me?
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm Elena Santigade, and I'm excited to welcome Chris Gentine of the Artisan Cheese Exchange to the show. Hi, Chris. Are you there?
You bet, Elena. How are you?
I'm good. Am I saying your last name correctly?
Yeah, Gentine. Yep, you did.
Okay, perfect. Good. Oh, I got so nervous. All right.
You're good.
So, Chris, I'm really excited to have you on air as part of this partnerships show where we're talking more about cheese making and the production side of things, as I think you can also help our listeners and me to understand more about how the Artisan Cheese Exchange works. So in our conversation before the show, you had a great analogy, and I'd love if you would tell us what you do with cheese is like hot rodding a car.
You bet, yeah. I've always been fans of those guys, so in taking a look at it, I like to make it clear, and I'm not a cheesemaker. There's some people out there who mm-hmm. give a huge portion of their life and a lot of times their body to making cheese. So.
Right.
We are a little more like that. We're not General Motors. We're not building the cars, but what I like to do, and I've always been fans of guys like Carroll Shelby and Big Daddy Ed Ross and, mm-hmm. and, you know, those old hot rodders from when I was growing up in the Revell model years.
Yeah. I want to put, maybe we'll try to get a photo up on our show page, listeners.
Yeah. The Rat Fink would be a good, you know, some that Ed Ross did is always good stuff or Von Dutch's Flying Eyeballs. So, you know, we're kind of, we kind of take what's, you know, been around and take plain things. And, I work with buddies of mine who master cheesemakers that I've known 25, 30 years in mm-hmm. some cases, and sometimes it's a multi-generational thing where in the instance of Carrie Henning, my grandfather bought from his grandfather, my dad bought from his dad, now I buy from him. So
wow.
a little different in that because, you know, we sit down and we do a typical Wisconsin thing. We sit down, maybe have some beers or a or an old-fashioned. And kind of, you know, talk about what we'd like to do either from a culture standpoint or affinage standpoint or a make format standpoint. And then we pretty much come up with a plan and sometimes things work out great and sometimes they crash and burn. But, you know, we basically chop, channel, pinstripe, and paint some flames on stuff.
And I mean, I imagine it sounds so fun, and it also does sound like you're whoever you're sitting down having that old fashioned with, you're operating on a sense of creative endeavor. So it's like,
you bet,
those R&D projects that don't quite work out, it seems like that comes with the territory.
And so, you just kind of write it off, and sometimes you hold them or whatever you do, and sometimes they get better, sometimes they get worse.
So how does it work? You basically come up with these ideas with your cheesemaker buddies, and then...
Yeah, well, or sometimes it's just my wife and I sitting around, she's done quite a few. I mean, she's really been the inspiration behind the Blue Jay and another cheese we do, the dough, and pretty much, I don't know, she's a good inspiration for me for
listeners,
a lot of things.
Listeners, if you haven't had the Blue Jay, that's one of my favorite blue cheeses, and it has... And Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it has juniper berries in it, right?
Yep, mulled juniper berries in it,
It's so good, and with a little
and
gin.
A lot of butter fat, which, you know.
That always helps.
Like that, right? So basically, we go in with kind of a plan, and, you know, we'll build a couple different recipes, and then we have to make that cheese, and then I'm always a little too fast for most of the cheesemakers because I'm like, is it done yet? You know, and we just made it yesterday, Chris.
like it's still on the draining table.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's you know, you have to wait the time to see what it's like and then really take a look at those recipes. So anything that we do, you know, when we're doing something like a culture hot rotting like we do with like Vat 17 Fawn and Stag. I mean, those cheeses are really, you know, we've added a very intense cocktail of cultures from, you know, kind of deriving from flavor drivers from different cheddar making regions around the world that are a lot of cases non-traditionally cheddar.
Right.
And utilize those in that and then basically change up both the affinage style and then the format style, which is a big change in that cheese. I mean, a Banjo Wrapped Daisy ages out in a completely much fuller, rounder on your palate way than you get a 40-pound block, which is what we do for Vat 17, where you get more of that backbone of the classic aged cheddar sharpness.
Right, the edge.
And then you get those sweet finish undertones in there. So we kind of look at that. That one kind of came by happenstance of just saying, hey, let's not just make 40-pound block. Let's throw some into some daisies and see how they cure out. And, you know, that old way of wood boxing those bandage wrapped in wax daisies is cool to me because that's really our state's heritage. So, you know, we like to play on those tones of having that historic, what we used to do in Wisconsin way.
Right, little nod to tradition.
Yeah, and try to, you know, try to build upon those traditions and come up with something that's new and fun and never been done before. And I think that's, you know, Blue Jay is one of those things. It was tough to make it the first time because I really wanted whole and mulled berries in it. And I think both Sid, and I work with Sid Cook on that cheese, and Sid and I have been friends a long time. And we both agreed, that pop of that berry in there is great, right? So the first time we made it, I called him. I said, so how did it go? Did the make go well? And he's like, you maybe don't want to come anywhere near the factory for a while. And I go, why? What happened? Is the cheese bad? And he said, you remember how we both like those whole berries? He goes, well, they kind of floated up on the way when we were pumping it over to the finishing table and they shot all over the make room floor. So I got two young cheesemakers picking juniper berries out every drain in the building.
Oh,
and
no.
I don't think they'd be taking out for a beer if you showed up anytime too soon. So, you know, so that's one of those kind of half crash and burns.
Yeah. But you stuck with that one, and now it's, you know, great cheese.
Well, we do it, we mull them the morning of the, that was kind of the rules. We had to do something because we didn't really want to get beat up. So we mull them the morning of the make just so that botanical can really jump in there. So. Mm-hmm.
Totally. And you said that cheese was actually your wife's idea?
Yeah, she likes juniper berries. She'll toss them in, you know, when she's doing roasted meats or anything like and she's not a gin fan, but she likes juniper in that, and she really likes big buttery blues.
Mm-hmm. Who doesn't? Show me someone who doesn't. I don't even
know. Right, exactly. and I just like, I think Sid does a great, you know, and I try to work with guys who, one, I've known because, you know, we've got a rapport at least to start with. And then you know, have that ability to make a great cheese in a variety that we want to, you know, bring back, like, or bring forward whatever they're doing and take it and tweak it and make it something unique, because, you know, there's a certain degree of, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm saying it the wrong way, people get mad at me, but, you know, sometimes there's a little more lack of imagination than you'd like to see. So if we're doing something, I don't want to be doing something that's so close to what, you know, the guys I'm working with are doing. So if we take it and tweak it a little bit, you know, that makes it fun, and then everybody's got enough room in the playground, you know.
Totally. And so how many cheesemakers have you worked with on these projects?
We've generally worked with primarily Sid and Carrie, and Carrie's probably the core of it. Carrie Henning,
from Henning,
the whole family's involved there, which are, they're like, that's like the nicest group of people in the whole, you know, whole industry as a
that's
family.
Fun.
It's
yeah.
crazy. We also do some stuff with Katie Heidrichs and her group out at LeClaire, and she actually takes a cheese that we have from Carrie, and we had talked, and we were trying a couple other cheeses with her, which were, I think, kind of cool, and they still probably have some merit. She's a little busy to do it right now, but she basically takes what is a cured stag, and she strips that bandage and that wax off, and then we give it a nice bath in green chartreuse, which is kind of unique. I like liqueur soaks. I think they're a little different. I mean, wine's cool, but there's something, especially one that's, you know, maybe 140 herbs.
Yeah, chartreuse is so wild in and of itself. Combined with cheese, it
goes really well, and it lends to those sweet finished notes on that. That's called the Moon Rabbit. And then she also does a cheese with Wisconsin's own Jay Henry and Sons 5-year bourbon. So we call that one, what's called the Night Walker. So should we work with her on that project? Boy, I always wanted to do one with Ig Vella in California, even though he's not a Wisconsin guy, but Ig and I were good friends, and kind of inspired me when I was thinking about starting this company. We were basically a pure export company, exporting U.S. artists and products. Ig was the guy who kind of said, you know, if anybody can do it, I think it'd be you. You should go for it.
Yeah.
And he says, I'll make some calls, and the next thing I know, I had cheesemakers calling. So I always wanted to do a cheese with him, and just because I loved him to death. He was just such a great guy.
And so. The Vella Dry Jack was just, it's such a great cheese.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it would have been, I used to pop out there and, you know, see what he's doing and think. So there's some other people that we're talking. I can't, you know, can't tell you everything right
can't
now.
Can't give away all the secrets,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, right. But there's a couple that we've got, you know, in the cookers that we'd like to work with people who, you know, think we do really great things. And again, you know, twist them a little bit
and
away
so then,
from what they're currently doing.
Are you still exporting cheese?
We do, yeah.
And do you do a number of countries? Like, what's your biggest export market?
Oh, man. We actually just suspended this year one into the EU, and that one was tough. I think they really liked some of the creativity that the cheesemakers have over here. And we were doing that, you know, with companies from all over the U.S. It was just difficult because it would be very hot and cold from a volume standpoint, and the cost to get it over there once the cheese was landed plus tariff and then you know, redistribution,
right?
You know, they make a lot of great cheeses over there, so
there's some good ones in the EU.
It's but boy, man, people were so excited when they would, you know, it would come in, and I know, you know, specific cheese shops, and I was talking to Patricia Mickelson from La Fromagerie in London, and you know, she told me, she goes, I really slashed, you know, my margins on it because the cheeses were just so creative and
fun to have,
so well done, and I wanted to have them, but you know, the economics are, you know, you can buy one piece of that, or you can buy three fairly good sizes of, you know, some very good cheeses like Montgomery cheddar and and you know, things off of Nashville or Raymond's. I mean, it's tough for the economics, and you know, their food dollars are just as valuable as ours. So, but we still do things into Japan. We do Australia. We do a little bit in Hong Kong.
Very neat.
And you know, a few island nations in the Caribbean. So
cool.
Yeah,
how does Deer Creek fit in to this?
Well, Deer Creek is basically
a state of mind.
Ah. Yeah, it's a state of mind after maybe too much Orange Swift wine one night when my wife and I were thinking of a name. So that's kind of what Deer Creek is, still a state of mind. So.
Deer Creek is a state of mind. I like this a lot. Yeah, I'm going to be, as I ride the subway home from the studio tonight, I'm going to be in a Deer Creek state of mind.
All right, good.
I'm going to try.
I like David Finney's wines. I mean, he's kind of another, you know, flavor bender, I guess, for lack of a better way of saying it, and has done some pretty edgy things and really kind of recreated a whole category on nomadic reds, and just a great, you know, he's a great blender and vintner, and just, you know, thinking outside the box. So
sounds like
we take a little page out of him.
A kindred spirit to you there.
Yeah. He's definitely a rock star in my mind on the wine side. So.
And are all the cheeses that you're partnering with cheesemakers on, those are all under the Deer Creek kind of umbrella? Is that how
aside from one that we do that's 100% lactose-free, all-natural cheese that we do under the brand called Apollo's Gift.
I see. Okay.
Yep. So that's a little different, but that fits a real niche for people who are lactose intolerant, but you know, may not want to do the other options in that you know, sphere. Maybe, you know, if they're not vegans, maybe they, you know, still want a nice cow's milk cheese that just has zero lactose at a young age and performs like a mozzarella or a Monterey Jack.
Oh, I see, a young version of zero lactose. Interesting. So then also, I feel like we have to talk about the labels on these cheeses, because that's also, as from our previous conversation, I understand that's within the family partnership you have going there.
Yeah, that's my daughter, Sophie. She started drawing labels for us kind of by accident. I mean, I knew she was always good, and we had worked on really our 1 year and our 3 year label with a guy that I knew since I was a little kid, and who's actually Jim Sartori from Sartori Cheese Company's nephew.
Oh, okay.
And we got to be buddies stealing Jim's sailboat a long time ago. But I needed a label. We were coming out with the Fawn, and I needed a label for that. And at the same time, my daughter was had just made the JV volleyball squad at her high school.
Oh, congratulations, and, Sophie.
Yeah, she was excited. Yeah, it's a long time ago for her now. But, she came up, and you know, the two of the girls that I thought were pretty cool seniors and had kind of, you know, taken a liking to her. She's like, you know, well, you know, they have these really cool, you know, like Coach Purse's dad, you know, and that's, dude, I really like one of those. I'm like, whoa, okay. Those are kind of pricey. So I'll make you a deal. Next time we're down visiting your grandmother in Chicago, we'll go, I'll take you down to the Coach store at Water Tower, and we'll get one if you draw a label for me. Not the big duffel bag size one, but, you know, reasonable size one. And she kind of looked at me. She was serious. And I said, "Yeah, totally." I said, "We'll go down." And I said, "You draw me the label. I need the font. I need a laurel. Here's my idea. You know, basically for kind of, you know, what I'm thinking from that the layout." And I said, "But I don't, you know, I can't get the rest of it." So I think a day later, I had it done pretty much completely.
Industrious teenager.
Yeah.
There.
And then when are we going? You know, that was the next thing. So.
Wow.
So that was, she was 14 when she did that. So that was the Fawn was the first. And then she did the Stag. And when you look at the Stag, you look in the eyes of the Stag, it's a little intense. She was a little she was a little mad at me at that point in time. I don't totally remember why, but you can see that intensity.
You can see it in the cheese label. It's preserved forever in the cheese label. I love
That's it. That's it. Yeah.
Listeners,
yeah.
We're going to post
some people love it because of that. So.
Yeah, I love it. Since you've told me that, I've looked at it and thought, "Wow, I see that look."
But that was for that at that time it was two pairs of Toms. Which was a pretty good deal for her dad.
Yeah, that's better than the Coach First, potentially.
Well, and when she did the rattlesnake, and now she's done rattlesnake, caraway, boo, moon rabbit, but she did when she did the rattlesnake, it was pure cash. She was heading to college, so
different.
But it
phase.
Was an intense label, because it's got the skull with the snake.
And, it's really
the snake's going through the eyes, and my wife, she's like, "We are so not putting that on a label." I go, "We so are," but I said, "Is everything cool, honey? I mean, you're heading to school, everything all right?" She goes, "Yeah, I'm fine." She goes, "You make me eat the cheese before I draw the label. That's what the cheese does to your face." I said, "Okay, I got it." So,
listeners, that's a chili. Huh? That cheese has some hot chilies in it, so that's
that's and a little tequila for fun.
All right, very good. Well, I love it.
Thank you.
And I can't believe it, but here we are at the end of our show.
That's all right. That's,
Chris.
Thank you so much for thinking of us. We really appreciate it.
Of course.
And it's something that, we keep moving forward and trying to do the right thing. We just started as a 1% for the Planet company in July to try to give back to the Earth.
And, that's great.
And what we're doing, and hopefully people can support that and enjoy, the cheese and enjoy
that's
it
a
with
win-win.
Family and friends. Yeah.
Totally. And
it's that entertainment cheese and hanging out with family and friends and food can bring people together. That's an awesome thing.
Totally. Totally. So listeners, keep an eye out for Deer Creek cheeses all over, right? They're really we get them out here on the East Coast.
Yep. There's some pockets. There's going to be a nice wave of the stag coming out to some locations near you guys. So
wonderful. Yeah. Well, Chris, thank you so much for calling in and for sharing more about your unique approach.
You bet. Thanks for the opportunity, Elena.
Okay. Listeners, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more Cutting the Curd. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.